Hi, my name's Lydia and I'm a human of HR.
Hi, my name's Simon and I'm a human of HR.
Hi, I'm Emma and I'm a human of HR.
My name's Jill and I'm a human of HR.
Hi, my name is Michael and I'm a human of HR.
Welcome to Humans of HR, a conversation about all things HR. We keep it real, raw and refreshing. We're not afraid to ask the questions or go where others won't go. We're real people having real conversations about real topics. You ready? Let's do this.
Yes, let's do this. Welcome everyone to the Humans of HR podcast, and it's great to be back. It's great to have you back as well. It has been a little while, and it's great for us to have the opportunity to get back into the Humans of HR lounge and get into some real conversations again. So thanks everyone for being a part of it. I am joined today by my usual partner in crime, Mish Farah-Eagles. How are you, Mish?
I am great, thanks, Dave. It's been a while and I was so looking forward to hearing the let's do this. I missed it.
Did I do it?
You did.
It's like riding a bike, really, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. I think it's just unconscious habits, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Unconscious habits and, you know, coming from someone who knows a lot about conscious habits and conscious leadership. So thanks again for being a part of it, Mish. And we are joined by a fresh voice to the podcast, all the way from Minneapolis in the United States. Welcome LeapGen's Head of Marketing, Jess Von Bank. Great to have you here, Jess.
Thank you, Dave, and thank you, Mish. I have a conscious habit myself, and that is storytelling. So what a pleasure, a true pleasure to have a new platform and new voices to bring to the industry. I'm so excited to be here. And now I know that, what is it? Let's do this. That's the cue for when we start to have our conversation. Now I'm new to this. Yes. So thanks for having me.
What a perfect way to be good at storytelling, Jess, like head of marketing. I mean, that's just a dream role, isn't it?
Honestly, it is. It was so, I think I might have laughed out loud when Jason Averbuch asked me to be his head of marketing for LeapGen, because I'm not a formally trained marketer. I'm a storyteller who comes from industry. I'm incredibly passionate about work and how, when, why, where we do it, and telling that story, connecting the dots in a meaningful way for business. And it was a pretty conscious decision, I will say, for LeapGen to have that be our brand voice, because we don't do that well enough in our space. And I explain that because that's a perfect nod to this podcast and to what the two of you have created, telling real stories about work and how it's done, the people who do it, why, and being a little bit more real and storytelling that in a different way than we ever have before. And 2020 handed that to us on a platter.
Yeah, it's almost like we saw it coming, Dave.
Oh, absolutely. We are two of the most prescient people around. You know, I foresaw all of this stuff this year. Yes. No, I don't think it was any playbook. I don't think many people saw this coming at all. But we'll get stuck into some of that in a moment. But thanks, Jess. And one of the reasons for having Jess with us today, not the least of which is her voice and her perspective, and her storytelling. But we in the time since I think we last did one, I have now joined forces with LeapGen and are building an Asia Pacific presence for LeapGen. So I lent on Jess and said, I've got this podcast that Mish and Jared and I have done, but we just wouldn't mind a bit of help so we can get a bit regular with it and have perhaps the ability to tap some different audiences. So so I'm grateful that we've been able to take what's been a bit of a part-time, though worthwhile, activity, Mish, and be able to bring that perhaps into a structure where we get a bit of support so we can make it happen a bit more frequently.
Amazing. Together we achieve more. Isn't that how it works?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's really, we achieve more.
I'd like to be more mini-me's around to to help me get some things done. Part of my 2021 plan.
I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are missing one of our voices, Jared. Jared is tramping around the South Island of New Zealand at the moment. More strength to him. So we'll certainly have him rejoin us in the weeks to come. So we're not just missing that beautiful, silky radio voice of Jared's, but, we're also not going to get that upbeat Kiwi perspective that's been actually pretty good for us during the pandemic, because our friends across the ditch have done a pretty good job so far.
They have.
Navigating through this. Very good. So what I wanted to do today was really to have a conversation with you guys about what I've been calling navigating to a better normal. And what's behind this is a lot of conversations that I've been having with people. You know, this term new normal, you know, we're not going to go back to the old normal. There's a new normal. And I keep asking, what is new normal? Well, I don't know. I don't know what the new normal is. You know, it's working from home, or it's, you know, and you start to get these, disparate suggestions as to what that might look like. And it struck me that we might have an opportunity here as we start to get better at living with the virus. And as we rebuild, you know, out the other side from an economic standpoint, from a public and social standpoint, public health and social standpoint, we have an opportunity to perhaps be proactive and shape a better normal than what preceded us. And so what I wanted to explore with you guys today was what are some of the things from our experience this year that we can see as perhaps surprises to the upside, positives, you know, new ways of working, taking the commutes out of our life, whatever it might be. I'd like to kind of get your perspectives on those, and then get you to help me to frame up, you know, if we had the power to create a better normal, what do we want it to be? So how do we feel about that? Are we up for that?
Yeah, let's do it, Dave.
Well, Mish, can I bring you in to start with? Because I know you and I, we're here in Australia, we're here in Sydney, so we've had that experience to date, which for me was about a pretty hard lockdown early, a kind of violent, abrupt change to our world, our universe, and certainly, you know, affected our households in various ways as well. But we've done pretty well coming through that and rebuilding and kind of coming out the other side. So what are the sort of the salient things for you from the experience to date this year? What are the sort of highlights and lowlights if you need?
I'm just dealing with a 14-year-old dog who's decided to come and place herself next to me and snore her heart out, you know, the realities of life. Oh, look, I think this year has I think it's been very unique to all of us in different ways. And whilst, you know, there's obviously been the effects of the global pandemic, I've seen it affect different people in various different ways, and companies even in different ways. Some companies have absolutely thrived and others have had a real shake up. On a more global perspective, probably some of the benefits I've seen externally the environmental, factors. I look around at Venice, I look around at the sky, and I look at, you know, some of the canals that are crystal clear and have never been this way in years because of, you know, the lack of pollution in the air. I was reading the other day, you know, carbon emissions are down, you know, I think by, you know, 5% across a variety of locations, which is incredible. So whilst there's been a lot of struggle and a lot of, you know, challenges for everyone, I think there's been some definitely upside on the environment side, environmental impact.
Yeah, which is great. I hope we can harness some of that. I hope that we're showing the way. What have been some of the things for you, Jess? You've got a very different experience, obviously being in the US, where, you know, it's been you've been a lot harder hit, but you've also had, I know, I've heard you describe it as dual pandemics as well. So perhaps if you could just give us a frame of reference from your perspective too.
You know, when people ask for my reaction or where you're in general conversation with people, and we all tend to say the same thing. We use the, you know, sort of reliable catchphrases to talk about what's happening. And I really had to sort of reframe and maybe force myself to describe it a different way. I say, what a time to be alive. Because there's a lot to be said about how 2020 has gone down. And some of it, and I agree, Mish, some of it has been very positive. And I'm an optimistic person by nature, and I look for the wins in everything. But that doesn't mean it's been easy, but by any stretch of the imagination. I happen to be in Minneapolis, so when I describe the dual pandemics, it's the obvious global health pandemic where we've all thought about our physical safety, our health, our wellness in different ways and prioritized it differently than we ever have before. But the social justice pandemic, the fact that many of our organizations talked about race at work for the first time ever, or for the first time really honestly, you know, and we probably should have been having that conversation long ago. The fact that we're sort of peeling away the layers of the onion on some topics that we didn't used to approach easily or naturally or proactively. And now we're sort of in this reactive state where we have to have conversations. It's a political year. It's an election year here in the United States, as the world knows. We're taught not to talk about race, values, politics, our home front, our family, who we are. We put masks on when it comes to work. We have no masks left in 2020. That's what
isn't it kind of ironic, Jess, that, you know, we are taught not to put the masks on, you know, but there's been such a contradictory, you know, you know.
I love the fact that all the masks are gone.
Totally.
And what does that mean? What conversations do we have now? And I absolutely hate the articles I read every single day, the McKinsey report that just came out, that 1 in 4 working women are considering downgrading or downgrading their career or departing the workforce altogether because they've learned they can't handle their career, their home life, their family dually. They can't have both at the same time. And so that says something. And I'm one of those, by the way. I'm part of that demographic. And so that says something. That means we never designed work for women who are rearing children, who are having a family at the same time their career is escalating, or they have, you know, that they literally can't have both. So that means that something was broken in the first place. And this is our moment. This is our moment to talk about pay equity, to talk about gender at work, to talk about inclusive workplaces, to talk about bringing women who work, bringing diverse voices of all kinds, bringing all levels of functional ability. We don't talk about disabilities at work. There's so many conversations we don't have. And this year, we're having all of them. It's crazy. We're not equipped. We're not ready. But this is a good moment for us, I feel.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, this year has absolutely brought so many things that people have either been too afraid to talk about or not certain whether it's appropriate to talk about or even how to have the conversations to the surface. And if anything, it's started to remove the armor because people have gone, well, if I'm not going to say it now, when am I going to say it? And I think particularly around race as well, you know, Jess, it was certainly something, you know, I was never not allowed to talk about, but was never really spoken about in our family. And this year, more so than ever, I've watched a lot of films involving, you know, the history of the coloured race, particularly in America, and even one last night on Mercy. And, you know, I really actually struggled sleeping last night after watching the movie because I was so uncomfortable with the injustice that was done. And I have so much more awareness and ability to relate to why they are so angry and why they feel the way they feel. Yeah, it's been very eye-opening.
I mean, I literally feel we've been brought to this place where if you're not uncomfortable, you're not awake.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. Yep. Yep. I couldn't agree more.
That's an interesting point. And from my what you were describing there, Mish, and Jess as well, that discomfort, like it's awkward, and it makes you question: Are you a good human yourself? And you know, I've had a lot of that myself, I must say. And it's made me really think more consciously about what's important and where, you know, what can I be doing to ensure that, you know, we are creating a world, a society where everyone can truly belong. And I think I've used the language, I've used the words a lot, but I'm not sure that I understood as deeply as I needed to, because it was uncomfortable, you know, and quite often we're built to avoid things that are uncomfortable. Now, this year, everything's been uncomfortable. So that whole avoidance of things that are not in your comfort zone or not a comfortable place to be, perhaps has brought the shackles down and made us realize, you know, it's okay to feel uncomfortable. Whilst we're in this position of discomfort, now's the time to be, you know, having the important conversations with others, with yourself, and do that from a genuine place of wanting to, you know, wanting to see change and wanting to be part of that as well.
It's interesting, you know, it's really interesting listening to you talk about that, because, you know, I don't want to talk about me, but just for a second, I've actually been so comfortable this year. You know, yes, there's been a lot going on, but I've been in a very fortunate position that, you know, things have been absolutely thriving, you know, I guess work-wise for me. And Jess, when you said before, what a time to be alive, I couldn't agree more again with that. You know, there is so much opportunity, and in every challenge, there's a great opportunity to be had. And I think it's really forcing, you know, when you talk about the new normal, Dave, it's actually forcing people to prioritize themselves, you know, think about what's actually important to them. And a lot of people are evaluating their priorities and, you know, how they show up themselves on a daily basis, but also at work. And I think there's one thing I've seen that's been really consistent is people are almost now more comfortable to be more authentic. And I think that is the thing that we need to encourage, you know, more than ever, as part of a new normal or a new better, whatever the language is, you know, used, is to actually be themselves and be, you know, be proud of who they are. You know, people sometimes change who they are to go to work or in meetings or when they engage with, you know, certain people. But there's so much to be said about people really having a space to actually feel they can be their true self.
We've always talked about that convergence of work life and you know, outside work life, and a lot of that's been somewhat contrived. This year, you know, we were all forced into melding all aspects of our lives, and for a lot of people, as you quite rightly say, and look, I would include myself. I've always been someone who's enjoyed not having too much separation between what I do in various aspects of my life. It kind of works for me. But there are some people, and some people in my circles, who still are really, you know, I think that whole bringing the walls down and not having that distinction between my work life and the persona that I have when I'm you know, driving into my CBD office and you know, all the trappings that make me feel like that's my work persona. I know there's a lot of people that have been grappling with that as well. And as we look to shape a new normal, or a better normal, sorry. I think we've got to be sensitive to how some people aren't really dealing with that, being thrust into a what you see is what you get, genuinely authentic mode as well. I think people will thrive if we can break those walls down.
But. Yeah. Yep. Oh, absolutely. And I think making people feel that it's actually okay to, you know, say what you're thinking, and even if it doesn't feel right, to, you know, to feel safe to, yeah, just, I guess, share where they're at or whether they need help, you know, with having those conversations. Because I think it has really, you know, there's been a lot that's gone through the washing machine, for want of a better term. And, yeah, I think boundaries is something also that is going to be part of bigger conversations in terms of how people start to manage them moving forward, and having them in a more sustainable manner.
There's a difference, Mish, and Jess, I'm going to dive you into this bit because you have experienced, I guess, needing to be locked down more than perhaps Mish and I have here in Sydney. And I know my family who are down in Melbourne have experienced a big lockdown for the second time, and they are genuinely fatigued and perhaps not enjoying the experience as much as perhaps enjoying the experience, not being able to thrive.
Or cope, even cope.
Scenario. Yeah. So, just wanting to get your perspective, Jess, on is this bringing the walls down? Is it something that is sustainable, or is there going to need to be a natural spring back to, putting some walls and boundaries up around work and life?
I think parts of it are not. It's a great question, and I have thought a lot about this because I'm used to working virtually. I've worked from home or traveled for business or some combination thereof, with the office always an option that I could go to or not, for over 10 years. So I'm used to flexibility and I'm used to distributed work. I'm also used to traveling for business and suiting up to see clients. And, so even I had to make adjustments in what I was accustomed to. And when I went into lockdown with 3 young children who I needed to keep in some sort of learning environment while I was trying to be productive as a working professional. And was that ideal? Is that sustainable? Absolutely not. No. But I love the idea that we've personalized work for people. I was sort of chuckling listening to the two of you because it was not so long ago. It literally was not so long ago that we remember dress codes. I mean, literally, remember when it wasn't acceptable for a woman to appear in the office without hose or heels, or a man to appear in a business environment with a proper collar or having his jacket on if he was in a certain, that was not so long ago. And when I think about the ways I have appeared to my colleagues and clients with children in my lap, or in some state of undone, where I hope I've brushed my teeth before I got on my first meeting of the day. What we now consider to be acceptable, is that sustainable? No. Do I actually feel better, more creative, more innovative, more productive if I'm in an environment that's suited for that kind of work? Absolutely. Do I want to work with children in my lab? No. But the fact that we've personalized work in such a way that people now feel like they have control. They now feel like they can say, they get some level of permission granted to them to design work or to perform work in a way, in an environment that works for them. So if that's virtual and it was never virtual before, that's a win. I think we've resolved the trust issue. People can and will perform for you in an environment where they're not under your nose. They don't require constant monitoring. They don't require constant supervision. We've resolved the trust issue, which is a huge win this year. But we have to strike some balance where people can create, they can redesign work so that they can perform it where, how, when they're best able to contribute. I think we've done a poor job, I feel, so far, of making people show up in ways that we design for them. And those constructs do not apply equally to all. And so it's rather ironic, to be honest. I mean, the employment market has completely shifted from a seller's market to a buyer's market. I mean, it literally has shifted to where talent shouldn't get to call the shots anymore. But I do feel like when it comes to employee experience and to designing workforce experience, the bar has never been higher, to be honest, in terms of what talent needs, wants, expects, in the way that they are engaged, the experience we give them, the tools, the culture, the environment we sustain and support for them. We have to meet them where they are. That was always the right answer, but this year we needed to because that was the only way to get work done.
I don't know. Yeah. Sorry, Dave, do you want to go?
No, you go.
I totally agree with what you're saying in terms of that that's where it needs to get to. But I still don't think everybody's actually there. There's quite a few organizations that are still taking the perspective of you're really lucky to have a job. And they're picking and choosing their teams because talent there's a lot of great talent around at the moment, and people that are not, I guess, delivering. There's a lot of articles I've been reading and even seeing in organizations, and I've had to challenge a few leaders on this and sort of say, listen, you know, just manage the expectations here. Because people are still human. They're not a disposable resource. Just because someone may not be as performing as they will in the office, is that okay to write them off? And the answer is no. You need to have a conversation with them. But I think there's still a way to go in terms of some organisations really looking at that employee experience. Because there's a lot of great people that are unemployed.
Yeah. But there's also a part of that too, Mish, around performance. So you mentioned, you know, that there is a genuine perception out there, more than I envisaged there would be, and you would see this a lot because you work quite closely with HR leaders and HR teams, I'm sure, that the definition of performance isn't changing like it should, because we know that people are able to make the contribution and deliver outcomes, and in those organizations that are focusing on that as, you know, what we're looking for, particularly our professional, you know, white collar workers, if you like, to be delivering. But I've had a lot of I've been surprised by the number of people I've interacted with who, and some of whom I would expect to be, I won't say better, different, but they're saying things like, I don't trust that my team's doing the work.
Exactly.
If I can't see them doing it in front of me. You know, comments like, one of my team was walking the dog at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah. That's not working.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and that comes to the trust issue. And I think this has actually brought the whole concept of trust to the forefront in terms of conversations, but I think we've still got a long way to go, and this is just lifting the lid on determining what trust looks like.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, when it comes to, and Amisha, I know this is a topic near and dear to you. I think the opportunity for transparency and true leadership, transformational leadership, empathy, value-driven leadership, I think this is where we separate the good and the, you know, lots of work to do. And even those who have considered themselves to be good leaders until now, who valued the right, you know, valued communication, trust, empathy, designing work around people, not people around work. Even those leaders who we admired probably felt thrown for a loop this year and really need to reevaluate and rethink and reapproach people with sort of fresh eyes and the same values for sure, but leadership is ever evolving. And so if you weren't sort of already there, if this wasn't already a priority for you, this is certainly a year to focus. I think the upcoming year is the year to focus on your people first, truly focus on leading your people.
Absolutely. And that's about empathy, isn't it, Jess? Like, you know, we talk about trust, and trust's important. But you know, trust can be built into somewhat systemized. Like if you've got robustness in processes and in some of your organizational systems, there's trust within that. But empathy can't be systemized. Empathy is something that has to be at the individual level and has to be something that's valued and seen as you know, a really important instrument in leadership. Is that the right frame?
I think so. And I think, you know, we paint things like leadership, trust, empathy, even change. We tend to paint these things with a broad brush stroke, but we actually have to model the behavior. We have to show what it looks like in practice, even in diversity and inclusion. we talk a big game. We make big marketing statements. We say all the right things from a PR perspective. Our employer brands look pretty on the outside. Our employee value propositions say the right thing. But guess what? They all look and sound the same because we know what they should look like. We know what people want to hear. But is that what it feels like inside the organization? And is that what every person inside your company would say they experience with their team, with their direct line manager? There's a difference between people leaders and managers of direct reports. And so you really do need to model the behavior you expect and show people what that looks like in practice and hold people accountable to that. Even something simple like communication, bi-directional communication, where people feel heard, they feel like their message reaches someone, that you've heard me, that you're taking action on the feedback or the experience that I'm having. Putting that into practice is much harder than it is to say, than it is to put out an engagement survey, for example. Putting that into practice every single day is the real challenge and where people really need to commit to that work.
I think, Jess, you've just, highlighted some really valuable insights there. You know, what I traditionally see is a lot of leaders get to their positions by incredible technical competence or by being really great at what they do from a skill perspective, whereas, you know, leadership sometimes is a second thought, you know, or how they lead a team is a second thought. You know, competency-wise, they're incredible. But some of them don't actually know how to have those conversations or how to necessarily lead a team because it's not something they've had a lot of great experience in.
Yeah, and maybe in other aspects of their lives too. You know, if communication isn't a strong suit, then it's being exposed this year because we don't – that is the primary leadership competency that's required is you know, obviously having the empathy and the but it's communication skills. It's being able to communicate effectively and support values and culture in remote models. You can't just walk the floor like perhaps many leaders were accustomed to doing and nod the head at people and feel like they're making that connection.
And what was previously accepted from a leadership perspective is no longer, is no longer respected. You know, people are really looking for people to give them some direction, give them some certainty, give them some hope, give them some, structure and clarity around, what the future really looks like and feel like they've been listened to. I think there's a real shift in what's expected of leaders and, maybe that can be another topic of conversation in the coming weeks, but there's a real shift in terms of what the expectations are of leaders definitely moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, I just wanted to perhaps shift tack slightly and perhaps go more into what the physical construct of work is going to look like in a better normal or what we'd like it to be. And so in this, I guess in this part of our conversation, what I'd be keen to look at is, we've forced a lot of people into distributed working models and, working from home and working outside of a physical office structure. We know that CBDs will come back to some degree, but what will they look like and what will work itself? What will be different about work and, what the physical environment looks like in the better normal? Do you want to kick us off, Jess?
Yeah, I think, I helped to present an onboarding webinar this morning for an HR technology virtual summit. It's, I come from the world of talent acquisition, recruitment, marketing, onboarding, candidate experience. So it's sort of like putting an old familiar hat back on. And I literally begged, can we stop talking about remote hiring and virtual onboarding?
Yeah, totally.
It all should have been digital all along. That has nothing to do with technology or physical structure or proximity to one another. It literally has nothing to do with the tools or the systems, it's the approach that we take. It's how we deliver the right information, experience, resources, tools to people in the channels where they already exist. Start sending me stuff prior to day one. Don't wait till day one. That's a digital mindset. And you have to be intentional in designing an experience from that mindset. And so this whole notion of, you know, some companies are putting together back to office policies if they still require or for some reason, you know, desire people to be together at a physical work site or in an office environment together. And I can see that for some job functions where perhaps creatives need to work with other creatives, or perhaps because you're retail or you're a certain vertical, you know, line of work, you actually have to have a physical work site. And so there will be lots of situations where it's necessary to reconstruct work and to be mindful of the physical environment you put people back into as you try to return them to whatever that looks like now. But for a lot of organizations, the pressure is truly to throw away, to unlearn sort of the old notions and ideas that you have about how work should look and think about how it could look now. And I think the real opportunity is to think digital. It's to imagine a distributed work model. Where can people work? Where do people want to work? If you're not asking and truly listening to people or using data, we could have a whole podcast around data, using insights. There are natural insights to be gleaned where you don't even have to ask the question. There's data imprints everywhere that will tell you how people are most effective and the tools that they're using to be productive, how they like to create connections. Don't force people to connect a certain way. How do they naturally connect with each other? And so I think if we truly look and evaluate at how work could be constructed to better serve people now and moving forward, and sort of like pretend you don't know everything that we've learned or sort of the old habits that we'll be really tempted to return to, and really sort of reimagine how it could look for the better. This is the whole better normal you talk about, Dave. This, how could it look for the better? And take the wheel back a little bit to say, all right, the wheel of this speedboat has been spinning wildly on choppy waters this year. But what if we took the wheel and said, maybe we meet people where they are, and maybe we try something different here. I think that's the true opportunity when you can say, I hate, you know, back to work, back to office, back to everything. What if we said, yeah, how should this look now?
Absolutely. So I think that's a really nice reframe of it. If we keep saying we're going back, you know, there's a negative connotation to going backwards, I think, in just language itself. But if we're talking about, you know, what do we want the future to look like? How do we take what works for us now and apply that to a time when we're not constrained by a public health crisis or any other anything else that might stop us from charting our own course with it. So, you know, I think that's an important part of this. For me, it's about making sure that we can create a personalized and a flexible, genuinely flexible model that people can align their potential and their capability for the organizations they're working for with what is going to enable them to be the best version of themselves, whether that's to actually go into a physical office, work from home, hybrid of the two, because, I mean, we touched on the impact to women, and part of the issue we've got now is being thrust back to home creates an often untenable situation where you can't, literally can't create the space to be the best version of yourself in the, you know, in the work context to contribute, and that, you know, that layers in as much as anything, guilt or whatever other emotion attaches it to that. So there's obviously going to be the need for people to not be in a work from home environment if that's a better thing as well. Does that make sense, Mish?
Yeah, I'm just listening while you're speaking, and I think one of the words that really resonated with me then was space. I think space has been probably one of the greatest challenges for a lot of people is, A, finding space for themselves space to be able to focus without being, you know, interrupted, space to be able to create, you know, even the right space to have conversations with significant people in your life, whether it be partners, because you're spending a lot of time together, but are you actually having, you know, conversations that are really important, or are you just, you know, sort of coexisting and both just trying to get through the day? So I actually think there's a lot of work to be done around, you know, asking people, how are you going to be able to deliver your best work? What does it look like for you? And really, yeah, being open to hearing and actually considering what they're putting forward, not just asking them to tick a box, but asking them and really considering what they're saying and whether it could work, you know, for the organization. Because a lot of organizations are going to be left with a lot of empty office spaces now, and that's going to have an economic impact as well. So we need to, you know, I guess balance out some way how it's going to work for the organisations to still make sure they can be in a position to serve their clients and, you know, deliver what they need to deliver, but also, give people the opportunity to work and deliver in a way that enables them to, you know, live a great life. And I know that sounds kind of cliche and I cringe as I say that, but, you know, live a life that, you know, you should be proud of, or, you know, work for an organization you should be proud of. And I, you know, I cringe every time I hear someone say, you know, outwardly our company says this, but inwardly this is actually what it feels like, or this is what is happening. And the disparity just, oh, makes my blood boil that so many organizations still have that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Mish, in a similar way, somebody, more than one person, I'm asked often about this dual, you know, these multiple hats and the double shift of a working parent who has children at home schooling. And, you know, and I mentioned at the top of our conversation, is it ideal? No, it's not ideal for everybody to be in their best learning and working environment. But I sort of hate the question. I'm asked about it a lot. Why aren't you storytelling this more? You know, and people will say, how are you surviving this? How are you surviving? And I get the question, but I hate the question. Mm-hmm. I'm not surviving this. I'm raising my children and I'm doing some of the best work of my career. This isn't something to be survived. This is something I'm hoping to thrive to thrive within. You know, this is a time of my life I'll be proud of, and I'll storytell through a much different lens when, you know, when I have some time to do it. I don't want to serve.
When you're driving the Winnebago around.
Yeah. I mean, this is my life. I'm living it every day. This isn't something I'm just surviving day to day. And so I think that's the challenge, is to let people, like, we should all be doing some of our best work if possible, or living our best days if possible. But that requires we have some semblance of personalization and control and designing our lives in a way that we can thrive. And that's the, you know, the control that I think people need to feel. We can't control everything. 2020 is out of control. There's nothing for us to control except our own lives and realities and existence. And
I love, we can control the way we react, though, Jess. We can control the way we respond to situations.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great. That's a really empowering message, and it's an important one. You know, this is not, it's not something to be survived. We're, you know, we have the ability to frame what we want it to be for us, and how, you know, we want to be the best version of ourselves. And for many of us, I would include myself. I mean, I've been really enjoying the ability to totally meld my life, and, you know, it's working for me. It's, I know it's having a positive impact on the people around me most of the time. and like I get derive a lot of joy from seeing that as a positive impact, and for me, I'd like this mode to become, you know, the default, and it will be for me. I know that because I'm fortunate to be in a position where I can control that perhaps more than other people might. But that whole ability to make it your own and to feel like you're in control That probably is the difference between feeling like you're surviving versus thriving. It's a really good point. Wow, I knew we would cover some ground pretty quickly here. We were clocking up to close to the end of our time together this morning, and this morning for us, this evening for you, Jess. So much more that we can touch on it, and I'm keen to keep the conversation going. Now we've got back on the horse and we've got another episode up and going. So I think that's probably where we'll have to wrap up today's conversation. But thanks very much, Jess, for jumping on all the way from Minneapolis this morning, and loved having your input on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure.
And Mish, as ever, great to have some opportunity to chat to you and get your perspective on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks. And lovely to have you join us too, Jess. Hopefully you can be more regular.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
Thanks. Excellent. So don't forget to subscribe on your podcast player of choice check out our new landing page as well. So it's been great to spend the time with you today. I will have some notes in the episode notes as well to steer you to it. But for now, it's been a pleasure, and we'll see you again next time.